This is Fresh Air. Amos Oz is one of Israel's leading writers. He's illuminated his country's political and moral dilemmas in his novels and essays. Oz is also one of Israel's leading peace activists. He co-founded Peace Now. He's advocated a two-state solution, and he thinks that's the direction his country is now headed in. Oz is visiting the U.S. because his latest novel has just been published here. It's called FEMA. Earlier today, I asked him if the Israeli-PLO peace agreement is the breakthrough he's been hoping for.
This is no time for euphoria, and of course, the real hard work is still ahead of all of us. But an emotional and a cognitive breakthrough had been achieved. Even if the worst comes to the worst and there is a setback, a stalemate, even a break of the negotiation, the second handshake would never be as difficult as the first one. We'll never have to start from scratch.
What is the role of the peace movement now that a major step has been made toward peace?
Now I think we are no longer a protest movement. It would be very silly for the Israeli peace movement to go on protesting each time we think Mr. Rabin is not making enough concession or not making them fast enough. I think this is time to become a bridge-building movement. Working on changing hearts and minds of many reluctant Israelis and Palestinians, engaging ourselves in a cultural and historical dialogue with the Palestinians over their feelings, their past, and ours. In short, it's time to educate, not to protest.
So how is this changing what you do?
Well, I do what I've always done. I talk to people. I go places, talk to people, listen to people. Sometimes record, sometimes write an article in the newspaper. I think some of the anger which motivated me in the past, some of the raving rage which made me write dashing articles is no longer there, and I can happily live without it.
Are there debates within Peace Now and the larger peace movement about what the next step should be?
Always have been. You don't get any two Israelis at all to agree on anything with each other. In fact, you hardly ever get one to agree with himself or herself. Everybody has a divided mind and soul on every issue. So, of course, we have heated debates along different lines. I think the key issue is how sympathetic are different members of Peace Now to the Palestinian cause. Whereas some has a degree of sympathy, some others, including myself, never regard themselves as pro-Palestinians. Pro-peace, yes. Make peace with the Palestinians because they are the enemy, not necessarily because they are nice, not necessarily because they have been our victims more than we have been theirs, and not necessarily because they are the nice guys in this clash. You make peace with the enemy, in my view, simply because this is the enemy, and no one has the privilege of choosing an enemy.
You've written that now doves must be hawkish about holding the new Palestinian government when it's formed in the areas of self-rule, holding them to the letter and spirit of the agreement.
Indeed. It's the Palestinians' turn to show that they can deliver. If they don't deliver, there will be no deal. And I'll be among the first one to say that, Israel should not make endless unilateral concessions. The Palestinians have to show that they can deliver Israel security and peace. It's a give-and-take deal. It's not a donation from the Israelis to the Palestinians.
You said before that you think it's the role of the peace movement now to be a bridge to reluctant Palestinians and Israelis, who are suspicious of the peace agreement. What do you think are the main suspicions on each side?
Well, you know, after 100 years of a bitter, deadly conflict, a conflict essentially over who is going to go away, who is going not to be there. It is very difficult for the parties to have any trust in each other. The Israelis have lived for two generations, really, under a collective Salman Rushdie experience. There has been a death verdict issued on the whole of Israel by Islamic fundamentalist leaders and by Arab politicians. It is only natural that the Israelis are untrusting and suspicious. The Palestinians, for their part, have to undergo a major change. They have been trained for generations to think that Israel is a nightmare. If they only rub their eyes hard enough, it will go away. Or perhaps that Israel is a mobile exhibition that can be transferred elsewhere. They will have to change. It's difficult. it's a hard moment for both sides.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Israeli novelist and peace activist Amos Oz. His new novel is called FEMA. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Amos Oz is my guest. He's visiting from Israel. He has a new novel called FEMA. Amos Oz is also a founder of Peace Now. Do you feel that you're undergoing some kind of psychological readjustment after having seen Arafat shake hands with Rabin? I mean, were you expecting something like that? Do you see him differently than you did before?
That's besides the point, you know. How I feel about Arafat is irrelevant. I don't.
Why is that irrelevant?
Because you don't have to like an enemy in order to make peace with him. I am no Jane Fonda, and Arafat is not my Ho Chi Minh. And I don't think anything in the world will make me endorse Arafat or the Palestinian National Movement as it had been so far. I think it's one of the most uncompromising national movements of all times. I think it had brought a heavy disaster upon its own people. But I say this is besides the point because there is no question of endorsing the PLO. There is a question of making peace and coexistence. It's for the sake of life, not for the sake of love.
As you've written, both Israel and the Palestinians still disagree about the past and the meaning of the past. Is it possible to create a real and lasting peace while the meaning of the past is still disputed?
Absolutely. This is the way life is, not only between nations, between individuals. There is no need at all to agree on the narrative of the past, on who is to blame, on who started it all, on who was David and who was Goliath in this business, in order to create a future. We have to create a certain future in which we can stop dying and start living. That's all that is there. I mean, the rest is sentimentality. This is a tragic clash between two very powerful claims. And there is no way the Israelis will ever go down on their knees telling the Palestinians, oh, brothers, how could we do such a terrible thing to you, or the Palestinians to the Israelis. We are doomed and destined to live with two narratives. Now, I'm a storyteller, I'm a novelist, and I know very well that this is the way it's in my novels, and this is the way it is very often in human affairs.
You've written that the relationship between Israel and the Palestinians has been a tragic one. But the relationship between Israel and Iran or Syria, that's not tragic. What's the difference? What's the distinction that you're making there?
Well, the Iranians want to throw the Israelis into the ocean for fanaticism and hatred. The Palestinians have no other homeland, and we have no other homeland. There is a tragedy for you, a clash between right and right. The clash between Israel and Syria is a clash between right and wrong. Israel is right and Syria is wrong. It's as simple as that. Or between Israel and Libya. Or between Israel and Iraq. Israel is right and the aggressors are wrong. It is different with the Palestinians. It's right versus right. And this is the one which intrigues me most and fascinates me most. This is what I write about in my novels. This is what I deal with. I've always been writing about the clash between one very powerful case and another. And as a writer, as a novelist, I'm in the business of sympathizing with two or three or five conflicting and contradicting claims. This provides for a tragedy, but believe me, it also provides for a certain comedy.
Well, do you feel you've been able to find the comic aspects of the long dispute between Israel and the Palestinians?
Well, certainly in my latest novel, in FEMA, I have dealt with the comical side of tragic experiences, including the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It is a novel about a man who is obsessed with politics, overwhelmed by politics, eats and drinks and sleep politics, and yet it's not a novel about politics. It's a novel about obsession. Obsession is funny, always, when watched from the outside.
This is also about a man who might be obsessed with politics, but he doesn't do anything about it.
Yes, he's not a doer. He is a thinker. He's a good man who can do very little good, a giver who has very little to give, a great lover of women who is not very good at satisfying women in any way, a great lover of the universe, a man who is in a perpetual dialogue with street cats and stones, a great educator of every taxi driver in Jerusalem, an enthusiastic giver, and yet a man at the same time, a man who is unable to tie his own shirt, to button his own shirt. So here is the tragedy and the comedy in one.
Does FEMA represent to you a larger group in Israel?
You know, I'm no sociologist. I've written the same book, even if the sociologist had proven to me that there are no FEMAs at all in Israel. But I do have a certain hunch that not only in Israel, even here in this blessed America, this character of an ineffective, sweet intellectual, the good man whose kitchen is a mess and whose life is a mess and whose love affairs are a mess, who is forever paralyzed by seeing both sides of each dilemma, who is the compromiser who would like to satisfy everybody and make everyone happy, who, having to choose between tea and coffee, would apply for a mixture of the two because he wouldn't like to insult either tea or coffee. They are both very nice. I think this type is not entirely unfamiliar even in this country.
Well, I think you must be right. by the way, I was wondering if his political views are shared by you.
Well, yes, I'm very close to many of his political manifestations, although he is a lot more flamboyant and fiery than I am, and perhaps epiphanic. And yet when I wrote the novel, I was tongue-in-cheek about his politics and indeed about my own politics.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Amos Oz, and he's one of Israel's leading novelists and also a co-founder of Peace Now. He has a new novel called FEMA. You've written that you think there's a double standard that Western intellectuals have about Israel and the Palestinians and their use of violence. Let me get you to elaborate on that.
Well, I think there is a certain inclination among well-meaning people in the West to be more morally forgiving or more forgiving toward the Third World than they are toward Israel, or than they are toward any allegedly Western country. By the way, Israel is not a Western country. The majority of the Israelis are people of Middle Eastern and Oriental extraction. There is a certain inclination to give the Third World a moral discount for the past suffering and humiliation. In fact, I believe no one deserves a moral discount. Decency, yes. Help, material help, definitely, yes. Equal treatment, yes. But no moral discounts, ever. And I think it is very unrealistic to expect the Palestinians, or to understand the Palestinians and the other Arabs' violence against the background of their past suffering, and at the same time to assume that the Jews, having suffered so much, should become nonviolent. This is almost, I'd say, giving hypocrisy a bad name.
So you think in the eyes of a lot of Western intellectuals, the oppression of the Palestinians legitimizes their sometimes violent tactics, whereas the oppression and attempted genocide of the Jews is used to say, well, how can you people in Israel ever use violence after what you've been?
That's it, more or less. The Palestinians, you have got to understand, they have suffered a great deal. They have been persecuted and oppressed. It's only natural that they get violent. The Israelis, the Jews, on the other hand, having been through hell themselves, how can they be violent after such a terrible experience? Now, this is really giving a double standard a bad name. But it has deep and complex background, which is to some extent dealt with in my novel. FEMA is very excessive about the relations between Jews, Israelis, and certain Western critics of Israel, especially against some simplistic Christian expectations from Israel to become the Jesus Christ of the nations, forever turning its other cheek to the enemy. This is very much one of the topics which are on FEMA's mind and which are interwoven into the novel, again, in a rather funny way.
Mm-hmm. You know, the conflict between Israel and Palestinians has been going on for so long, it's the kind of thing that you think, well, maybe it won't ever end, you know? Maybe this is just going to go on. Did you expect that progress would be made?
Yes, I didn't have the timetable. But I did expect, in fact, FEMA in my novel, as early in 1989, he fantasizes, he has a cabinet, he presides as prime minister over a fantasy cabinet inside his own head, and he fantasizes about talking to the PLO and proposing Mr. Arafat to take control over Gaza first. Now, I have to admit, although I shared the perspective, when I wrote it for FEMA, I was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I thought, okay, he's a naive idealist and so on. Now it turns out that he was not only ahead of politicians and ideologists. This is not such a big deal to be ahead of politicians and ideologists. He was ahead of his creator. He was ahead of me. which perhaps shows we should never belittle the fools, not even the fools we ourselves create.
Amos Oz, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Amos Oz has written a new novel called FEMA. This is Fresh Air.